Hey guys, thank you so much for joining us again. This first episode is actually a series of episodes that are going to focus on each individual faction that you'll play in Gwent. The reason we're starting with monsters is it's probably the very first faction you're starting out with, mainly because the tutorial of Gwent and the faction you start out with is monsters. We are in no way, shape, or form experts when it comes to the monster faction. We just want to make the game a little bit more accessible to people who are new, people who are looking for ideas on how to make themselves a little bit better, and people who might not have the scrap to go, let's say, jump on playgwent.com and make some of the top decks, like your tier 1s and tier 2 decks. There's going to be a lot of cards and mechanics that we don't talk about, mainly because there's so many different ways each faction can be used, and a lot of different ways a faction can be used that actually hasn't even been discovered yet. I think that's how in-depth Gwent can get, if you make the right cards in the right decks. So thank you guys again so much for listening. If you like the content, please follow us in your podcast program choice. Drop a like or a comment in one of our streams and let us know how we're doing. If you feel like you can support us, you can use the support option in your anchor.fm, or you can support us directly through our stream. That helps make the podcast a little bit more professional, helps us purchase software, audio equipment, and all other sorts of things to help grow the channel, and hopefully you'll be a part of it. But guys, thank you again so much for listening, and here we go. I hope you enjoy the episode. Everybody, thanks again for joining the podcast. This is Dark Temp, aka Joe. We have Ezra, the normal guy, showing up. We're going to be focusing, it's actually our first episode, we're going to be focusing on podcast episodes directly focus on a certain faction. And our first faction we're going to talk about is monsters. The reason we're talking about monsters first is because that's probably what you're starting off with. So let's talk about monsters. So what's the best card in monsters?
I mean, we definitely have to give mention to Oberon. That's the new, not new, but the Master Mirror up, expansion and introduced the evolving cards for each faction. So, with his ability, he's more tailored to, the Wild Hunt, in a sense. Okay. And then he gets better, over every round, because he evolves. And it's also catered towards, devotion-based decks. Devotion is the mechanic where you run only monster tag specific cards. And I believe they did nerf him just recently with the Season of the Dryad introduction, where he was, I believe, 6 power, right? Or no? Or was he only 5?
I think so, yeah. He was a 6.
He was a 6, and then they increased his provision by 1. His old provision was 11, now it's 12. So it makes it just a little bit harder to run, other cards while also trying to fit him in as well. That one provision may not sound like a lot, but it can make a difference when it comes to making a deck that's going to synergize well.
Yeah, so I mean, the most basic monster mechanic that you're going to be noticing when you first start playing the Witch... Gwent the Witcher card game is Thrive. So the way Thrive works is anytime you play a card 1 power larger than the card you are playing, it actually adds an extra point. So let's say the most played card I think in Monsters is going to be the Indrega Larva. And when you put it down on the board, it spawns a base copy. So you have 2 1 power 2 armor larvas. And let's say we drop something like a Bruxa.
which is a 3-power card that also has Thrive and gives bleed for 2 turns. It's going to move those Dregalarvas up 2. So, up 1, 2-2, sorry. So, with monsters, the Thrive mechanic is really about dropping the monsters correctly with the correct curve. So, you want to try to have it to where every turn you're playing, you're taking advantage of Thrive. If we're talking about monsters, and Dregalarvas, probably going to be your most seen card in, I would say, about 95% of your monster decks, maybe more.
I mean, yeah, I don't think you would ever include Larva, or not include Larva in any.
Not include, yeah. So, you know, your Thrive mechanic is going to be your main base for monsters. You'll move into, like, the Drowners, which is a Thrive card, which is another incredibly powered monster card. When it comes to a Bronze, you're talking about a Thrive card that does 2 damage and is moving an opponent enemy card to the opposite row. So that would be great against Skellige for something that relies on being on the melee row. It could be great against Northern Realms for siege engines that rely on being on the right-hand row. And it could also be fantastic for moving defenders to opposite rows as well. Yeah, Thrive is going to be your main mechanic with monsters. Now, Devotion has been a new mechanic that's come into the game recently with the Master Mirror expansion. So you're going to have cards like the NL Conqueror, which is a 7-power card that only is 4 provision, which is pretty crazy. And it also has Veil, so it cannot be targeted by statuses. So really difficult to deal with if you're playing Nilfgaard, a faction that relies on poisoning, locking. So it's pretty much you either have to purify it or you have to play a card that destroys something with status.
And it's even more apparent now since Carapace, the new leader ability rework,
yep,
is now included in the game, giving a 3 boost along with Veil now.
Yeah. So it makes monsters much more difficult to deal with. I mean, I think the monsters, all their only mechanic they have, like, I wouldn't say their only mechanic, but Thrive is it's their main mechanic. I mean, that's kind of what monsters rely on. So you have a lot of different monster cards you could play. I would probably say if you're starting off in the game, you're going to start off with monsters anyways. So I would say focus on learning the Thrive mana curve. I called it mana curve, power curve, sorry. Thinking Magic the Gathering. Power curve to play it directly. And a lot of your cards are going to rely on something called dominance. Dominance essentially means that the ability on the card will be used/played if you have the most power on the board. So monsters usually are going to have dominance. Now it can get out of control if you're playing a deck that's going to get a lot of boost for certain cards, but yeah, dominance is another big mechanic with monsters. What other cards would we need to include? So, I mean, bronze cards, there's a whole bunch of bronze cards, so without really getting into talking about every card that monsters has, I would probably say Dregalarvas, Bruxes, Drowners,
Predatory Dive.
Conquerors. Predatory Dive is another fantastic card.
Especially if you get it to work right.
Well, especially when you're playing someone who's on blue coin and uses their tactical advantage right away on the first card they play. It's always just makes me feel special inside.
Right.
So blue coin, if you don't know, that means you're going to go first. Red coin is you're going second. If you play blue coin, you do get a stratagem card, and tactical advantage pretty much is it boost by 7 or boost by 8? Which one is it? Boost by a certain amount.
It's 5.
Oh, it's 5, so I'm way off. So boost by 5. So if they play that first, Predatory Dive, essentially the card says that each player destroys the lowest card they have. So if you're going second and he plays a big card and plays tactical advantage, you're only removing his card. So definitely abuse tactical advantage.
I mean, I guess you could also talk about Natural Selection as well. I mean, it's a good kill card.
So Natural Selection is a card that deals 4 damage to an enemy unit, and any damage. So let's say you're destroying a 2-point card, you deal 4 damage, it actually would spawn 2 drones on a random allied row, and a drone is just a 1-point token. So if you're playing cards that need 1-point tokens, like a Glutzy Warp, That would be fantastic. And a Glutzy Warp destroys all enemies with one power, and for each unit destroyed, it boosts self by two. So there's a lot of different mechanic with monsters. Natural Selection is a good, a pretty good removal card for sure.
And then we, you know, I mean, going into the gold cards now, because that's where the bulk of the monsters deck is going to be making big swings. We get started off with Parasite. That's one of the best kill cards in the game, I would say. You know, kill for six or boost for six, that's insane.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice thing about Parasite is you can choose one or the other. It's not just straight up damage. Trying to think, excuse me, of another card that does that. I mean, I know there's one or two more, but yeah, it's a super powerful card for sure.
Yeah, there is another card like that. Is it a...
Mate, I guess you have Tourney Joust, but Tourney Joust is a bronze that does, four damage, or does plus four, or sorry, remove a shield, do four damage, or add a shield and add four damage, or add four hit points. So, what else? So, you have a couple different mechanics also in monsters, one of them being Death Wish. Now, Death Wish is an ability that is proc'd if that unit is destroyed. So, for instance, Night Wraith is a really good Death Wish card. As you drop Night Wraith, it's a 3-power, 4-provision card that adds 2 rats on deploy. If it is killed, it adds 2 more rats. So it can technically be a 5-point swing, or it can be a 4-point swing down, but it also adds those +1 tokens we were talking about that you can use, like with a Glutzy Warp, or you can use for fodder for things like... there's all sorts of cards that do random damage to enemy units, so it could be a pretty good fodder as well. But be careful when you do things like that, because you can actually row lock yourself, which essentially means having 9 things on one row, which I've done before. So it really sucks when you're trying to play something and you accidentally row lock yourself.
Especially the Carrick Frigate plays with me with my ingenious self.
Uh-huh. Or if you're playing against Nilfgaard and Ursiper Officer and they just throw spies and they don't draw them back, so you've technically row-locked yourself and you can't do anything, which is always just hysterical. You also have the consume ability, which essentially is exactly what it sounds like. You consume an enemy unit. The enemy unit that is consuming gains the power of the allied unit. You consume an allied unit. It will gain the power of the allied unit consumed. So it can be very good for doing things like triggering Death Wish. It's also great for removing statuses. So if you have a card, let's say, that is locked or is in the process of being bled down, you can consume that status so you don't lose the hit points over turns. So,
you know, I think a lot of the community want the whole status transfer. You know, if a monster is consuming something, it should get the status transfer, but I feel like that would just kill the whole consume.
Yeah, I don't. I think the monsters don't have a ton of things going for them, in my opinion. I mean, monsters would usually play super tall. But I think that the non-transfer of status, I think, is really important to consume. And yeah, if you bring the status transfer, I think that kind of destroys the consume mechanic for sure, or at least makes it much less powerful.
I mean, it would make it to where you actually have to think about what you want to consume, not consume the first thing that gets a status on it, you know? But yeah. If you, let's just say, you play a Barghest and then you consume a unit with lock, well, Barghest doesn't even get access to his dominance second consume. So, yeah, just kind of pointless.
Yeah, pretty much. The Wild Hunt that has gotten more into the meta, I guess you could say more into the meta. I'm wanting monsters and Wild Hunt and Frost to get much more love than it's getting, but I think like our last podcaster was saying, Sunny, I think Wild Hunt's kind of underpowered, and it's not as good as it could be. I think there's still need some more fixes to it, but yeah, you have the Wild Hunt really came into it with the Frost ability, or leader ability. Then you have some good Wild Hunt cards that were added, like Winter Queen, and Ardgeth, which, you know, is an echo card that spawns Frost on both enemy rows for 3 turns.
I mean, it's not that Wild Hunt isn't good, it's just they're not consistently putting out damage, you know, on a constant basis, like as a bleed, you know, you have to wait to the end of every one of, I mean, at the start of every one of your opponent's turns for it to go off. And, you know, during your opponent's turn, it gives them time to react to it by either putting a shield on, which cancels out frost damage, or even putting on boost, vitality, whatever to keep it alive long enough for it to, the frost to basically just feel negated.
Yeah, so that's a good point. I mean, the frost ability is triggered at the start of the player's turn. So let's say you can't play it first if you're on blue coin, for instance, because it would proc at the start of the other player's turn. If he has nothing on the board, it does nothing, which I've learned the hard way like 5 times. So it triggers at the beginning of the turn. And also, like he was, Ezra was saying, with shield wall, as big as shield walls become, you can throw shields to throw it up, or you could be playing against a deck that has a lot of armor as well, and it's going to hit the armor first. So that's the other thing, too. It's a great way to move cards, because there are Wild Hunt cards that can move it to another row, and if you move it to a row that has frost, it does 2 damage, but it's underwhelming for sure.
Yeah. And I think the biggest change is just the fact that now we have the White Frost Leader ability that actually allows you to move a unit that you so choose to another row and throw frost on it, basically having the effect of Naglfar's crew along with Bruiser put into it.
Yeah, so Naglfar's crew pretty much is deploy. It spawns frost for 2 turns on enemy row. At the end of your turn, if there's frost on the opposite row, boosts off by 1. So you can play and build a deck that just throws nothing but frost down. A lot of people, I was hoping that when they brought frost more into the game, that people would be playing weather cards to help remove of that frost or remove of that weather effect, but it doesn't seem like frost is really that powerful to even warrant people giving up provision costs to put weather effect cards in their hand. So, yeah, talking about cards, we talked about Dreadal Larva, Drowner. Let's talk about some of the big boys, the top cards, top provision cost cards. Of course, you would have your scenario, which is Haunt, which essentially progress. So a way scenario works that every time you play a card that it asks for, so for instance, Haunt is progressed whenever you play a unit with Death Wish. It goes to a prologue when it's dropped, a chapter 1 and a chapter 2. So the way Haunt works is anytime you play a card with Death Wish, it moves to the next level. And it pretty much will spawn a Bargus. Well, actually spawns a Desert Banshee, the first drop, which is a pretty much a 4-power consume card. If you drop another Death Wish, it spawns a Bargus, which is another consume card. And then when you drop another Death Wish card, it spawns a Night Wraith, which is a card that drops 2 tokens. So that would be one of the big ones. You also have Oberon King, which was added with the new expansion, which pretty much will, if you have Devotion, which pretty much means you are playing nothing but monster cards, it will continue to evolve through the deck. I think it evolves the first round, right? But if you don't have Devotion, it doesn't go into the next one.
Yes, it'll always stop at 2 if you don't have Devotion.
Yeah,
but I mean, then of course, if you want to run a non-devotion monsters list, you can. Just for the fact, you know, you want to have the flexibility. The problem is you're not going to get Veil for the third evolve. And then also You don't boost Wild Hunt units when they're played. And then there's also a drawback to not running devotion specifically for the Wild Hunt list is that if you want to play the NL Conqueror, he will instantly destroy himself if there's not a non-devotion build going on.
Yeah, which is really funny when you play Oberon King and you ask for the NL and then you realize, oh shit, I don't have devotion. And then it just disappears.
So, you're like, oh crap, I have Onirati, or oh, I have Karathi. Crap.
Yeah. So there's a lot of monsters you can go a lot of different ways. I mean, Yiggern is probably the card you see a whole bunch as you start to climb in your ranks, which is gain armor equal to the number of cards in your hand. the unit has no armor, destroy self. So do not play that as the last card. Let's just say that.
I mean, you can, as long as you have Oz back it up.
Yeah. Going into that, Oz roll, which is pretty much you can consume if you play on the melee row. Consume a unit from your opponent's graveyard, and the range consume a unit from your graveyard. So in a perfect world, you're playing Jaeger possibly in the first round, the second round, and then you're using Osriel to eat it from the graveyard as your final play. And that is that's a 14-point swing. So that doesn't sound like a lot, but as you play, you'll realize it can be a lot for sure. Of course, you have some cards that can remove the ability to do that. With Nilfgaard, of course, you have Yennefer's Invocation, which will pretty much take any card they play it against and put it on the top of their deck. So, if they do that to your Jaeger and you lose the ability to use that. And, of course, you have Squirrel, which will banish the card from your graveyard. So you lose the ability to do that as well. But I think with Squirrel, it's really targeted for Echo cards or big scenario cards that can be drawn from your graveyard, like Masquerade Ball. I mean, you have decks that will play that twice or three times. If you don't know what Masquerade Ball is, we'll get into that when we go into the next factions, because we're focusing mainly on monsters, but just to kind of explain to you different things. So other big cards, man, what do you got?
Let's see. We have the, what do we have? Oh, so we have the introduction with, was it Master Mirror that he got changed? Gills? How he became, any unit you played with Deathwish was automatically activated. That was old Gills. Now the new Gills is he's more synergized with Wild Hunt. He's played on the ranged row. He's a 2-for-8 card. And then he spawns any special card from your deck. He allows you to play any special card that has the Wild Hunt tag in your deck. Mm-hmm. And that's not just any of the Frost cards either. That's Naglfar as well, which is an insanely good card for its 9 provision, where it lets you look at 2 random gold cards from your deck. You play one, and then you place the other on top, guaranteeing yourself that you're going to have a really good card for the next round when you draw again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just monster cards. That could be anything, like if you could play Oberon King and then set up Ardgeth for next round, you could play Yigern, you could play Aridin, Cave Troll. You could even pull Oniromancy if you were truly going for the non-devotion build as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways you can do that. I would say if you're starting out with monsters, of course, if you're starting out with Gwent for the first time, or you're starting to climb. I mean, the podcast, of course, it's focused around the Gwent, the card game as a whole, but it's really focused on people who are new to the game, who are trying to learn it. I would recommend, there is a streamer / content creator called Ace of Plays, and he built a deck called Big Dummies. And it literally is just playing on the Thrive curve. And it's a great deck if you're trying to understand how to play Thrive curve and to realize some of like your biggest monsters. So I would look at that. Some of my favorite monster cards, besides talking about Dregalarva, Jaeger, Osriel, NL Conqueror, I would probably say, we talked about Paris. I'd probably say Beast is fantastic. At the end of your turn, if this unit is not the unit with the highest power on the battlefield, boost it by 2. So this card can get crazy out of control if it's not dealt with quickly. And you can proc that ability each time, because monsters will usually play very tall. And when we mean by play tall, we mean very high hit points, either being dropped on the board at one time, or they will build over time by consume or whatever you're playing. You have the Striga, Ada Striga, which is a damage enemy unit by 2, or if you have dominance, damage by 4, and it's a 5 power card. So you're talking about a 9-point swing if you play it correctly. There's all sorts. You have Goliath, which is a 10 power card. Only problem with it is it has a death wish that if it is destroyed, the opponent summons the highest unit from their deck on the opposite row. But you can actually abuse that quite a bit too. For instance, if you're playing Goliath against, let's say, a Nilfgaard deck, and you death wish Goliath, you can actually draw cards.
You can pull their Usurper General, I believe, right?
You can pull their Usurper General. But it's actually bigger than that because Usurper General has an order. What card am I thinking about? Vincent Van Morlahem. So Vincent Van Morlahem is an Nilfgaard card that when it's dropped on the board, it destroys a card with a status, but it's a deploy ability. So if you are bringing Vincent Van Morlahem into the game because you procced a Death Wish off of Goliath, it does not trigger his deploy ability. So you can really take a card that's one of Nilfgaard's most powerful cards if you're playing like a mask, if they're playing a Masquerade Ball deck, whatever it may be, and take it completely out of the game and turn it into a three power card, you know. So granted, yeah, it's a 10-point swing, but Vincent Van Morlahem can do a lot of damage against you, especially with monsters.
Yeah, with the whole new statuses of Carapace now.
Yes. Absolutely. Some other cards. I mean, we talked about Parasite. Talked about, you know, you have like the Wild Hunt Riders, which is a four power card, but if it's played with dominance, now we're talking an eight powered drop for five provision, which is great. Before the last expansion, Vampires was really big, so they have the bleed ability. You can play cards like Orianna and Queen of the Night. So we can get into bleed, which pretty much means that every turn, the end of their turn, they lose one power on their card, which, again, you know, can be a lot. And then we're also talking about what other – oh, yeah, the Crones as well. So anyone that's played The Witcher 3 or read the books knows all about the Crones, and they all kind of power off each other. So, for instance, if you play Wispus first, it damages a unit by two and then increases its damage by two whenever you play a crone. So crones are also very powerful as well.
So another thing I'd wanted to touch on with the Wild Hunt Riders is when Oberon King is played, he does spawn and play a randomly selected Wild Hunt unit from a pool of three. And if Wild Hunt Rider is picked as one of the random three, and if you have the dominance, you could play the Wild Hunt Rider and it'll pull the other two out of your deck should you be running those for a possible 17-point play with one card being played.
Yeah, which is absolutely crazy. And then if you get that out early enough, every Wild Hunt card you play gets plus one as it's dropped. So again, it's playing on that curve for sure.
Yeah, like that's if should you go to round three, then all those units will get boosted because they're being pulled.
Yeah. There are some Purify cards in monsters, but very limited. Naglfurst Taskmaster will do that. You can purify enemy unit with deploy, but if you're playing dominance, you can purify one of your units instead.
We have Queen of the Night. Can't forget her. Yep. She's a vampire. She's actually really good. She gets bleeding if she's played on melee by four to an enemy, or you play her on range and she purifies.
Yep, which is great when you're playing Orianna, because Orianna actually will give bleed to enemy units or duration equal to the number of allied vampires, and Queen of the Night is considered a vampire. So again, it's looking at the cards that you're playing and kind of building off similarities that can make the card stronger.
You know, it's kind of funny, and I just realized this. Queen of the Night and Van Morlahem's Servant, or no, the Cupbearer, I mean, they have some similarities. They both proc a status on melee, and they both purify on ranged. Just noticed that. It's been months playing this game, and I never noticed that little...
Yeah, it's crazy you'll start to notice things like that, that the cards kind of match in a lot of ways, even though the meta... Not the meta, but the way the deck's played might seem completely different, but they're alike.
Yep.
In a lot of ways. I think we're coming... Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, we are missing out on the ever-famous kill card for MO. It'll be Ada Striga.
Yeah, I talked about Striga.
Oh, we did? Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a great card. I mean, you got to think when you're dropping cards, if you have to deal with another card that they might have. So let's say, kind of think of a card that can get out of control. If you're playing like a Blue Scout or a Blue Stripes Commando deck with Northern Realms, I think that's a 4-point. Yeah, it's a really quick way to drop a card and remove another card. So you'll hear us talk a lot about engines, and that's what an engine is, a card that has so much more value. The longer the card is left on the board, the more value it gives the player and the harder it is to deal with. So you always want to answer engines for sure. And Aedas Striga is a great way to answer an engine. Toad Prince is a melee card, consuming unit with 3 or less power. And that's a consume a unit, so it's not consume an enemy unit or consume an allied unit. You can choose what to do with it. So it's a great way to remove as well. And we have the Phantom, Aetherian Phantom, which is their Veil Zeal card that came out with Mastermere. Every time, so there's an order for melee. So if you put on the melee row, it damages a unit by 3. If you don't use the order, it boosts itself. So again, it's an engine, a card that will build over time, and it's a great way to maybe not remove a card because it only does 3 damage, but it's a great way to set up a removal because if it's already on your board, you can do 3 damage.
I think that we could talk about Aridin. Aridin's, you know, the de facto leader of the Wild Hunt, you know, from the Witcher 3 series.
Mm-hmm.
Him being that he spawns frost on an enemy row for 2 turns, and if he has dominance, he increases that damage by 1. So technically, as long as you're maintaining dominance with any of your cards, Aridin does not have to be the strongest card, but it is nice to make him the strongest card just so you're guaranteed that dominance does work.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing 3 damage per row. Now, that can add up over time as long as you're maintaining the frost weather rows. You know, I've seen people, you know, stack up their frost rows up to 6 to 7 sometimes per row. It's possible. It just takes a lot of setup.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about some of the leader abilities. I mean, in basic, they consider Carapace a basic, which is boost an ally unit by 3 and give it Veil. So I haven't really messed with a bunch, which is just really super strong. Force of Nature, which spawns and plays a Woodland Spirit, which is, you know, a 9 power card that's a relic, a token, and is doomed. We already talked about White Frost being able to move things back and forth, which should be really good against Skellige when they rely on being on certain rows, and it spawns Frost on that row.
And going back to Force of Nature, because that is the newest ability that came out with Season of the Dryad, not only is it a 9 power token with doomed, it also, because you're spawning and playing it, it's considered as a played card, and you're also using that as a thrive pro curve.
Yep. Yeah, so if you're talking about a deck or a round that has 5 or 6 thrive units out, you could be talking about a 9-point swing and just the card being played, then you could be talking 6 additional power down, which could be really good to making sure you put yourself over to be either winning on even or for card advantage, whatever it may be. Arrakis Swarm, which pretty much spawns a drone on an allied row and has 5 charges. This was really good. Really good when there was Ethereal, which would consume the card to the right and make it a 4-power card, kind of like cloning itself, but that has such been... I mean, you could do it with Arrakis Swarm, but I think Fruits of Yiskith was more of how that was used, and that was pretty much spawn a 1-power fruit.
Yeah, Arrakis Swarm, I would say, is more tailored to
Kiki Queen. Kiki
Queen build deck, and also Glusty, you know, if you're going off of that as well.
We didn't talk about Kiki Queen, but I think Kiki Queen might come back with some of the changes. Blood Scent, which is a give enemy unit bleeding for 3 turns, has 3 charges, and once it's done, it spawns an Ikimara, which is a vampire. So if you're playing Orianna, Queen of the Night, really good. Overwhelming Hunger, which is destroy an allied unit, then spawn an Ikimara in its row and boost it by a destroyed unit's power. That's really good to trigger Death Wishes, especially Death Wishes that deal damage to enemy units or consume or destroy those enemy units, so... all good ways to look at it. So otherwise than that, what else are you thinking of big monster cards?
We can talk about Plague Maiden. She's, you know, the de facto rat queen, in a sense. She's a 7-for-12 card. She's one of the highest monster cards, you know, in their deck in terms of provision count. And when she's killed, or consumed, however you want to put it, she spawned 7 rats in a row, which is perfect for, you know, like I said, the Glusty Warp setup, the old Ethereal before he got nerfed. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, the quickest way to, you know, to guarantee that you were going to have plenty of tokens for Ethereal to transform into, but that's not the case anymore. So right now, she could just be used as a Glusty Warp setup, in a sense, where you're just going to fill your whole board up with rats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or I believe a lot of people, too, are running the Yennefer of Vengerberg combination, where they just play a bunch of rats. And when she's played, she boosts... she can either damage all other units by 2, which is what you don't want to do, because then there's no point in playing your rat tokens, since they do spawn at 1. But when she's played on the ranged row, she boosts all other units by 2. That's including your own opponents, but if you have more units, you're getting more value out of it. Especially yeah. with how many tokens you could spawn in with the many plays that Monsters has with, you know, Arrakis Swarm. You have Natural Selection. You have Plague Maiden. What's the other one? There's one more.
I'm not too sure. I'm drawing a blank as well.
Oh, it's the eggs. That's what it is.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's the eggs.
Draga eggs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Draga eggs. And then you have Noon Wraith, which is spawning rats on your enemy row, on enemy's row, which is actually very beneficial too, because Glusty Warp pulls from all units on the board. It's not just your side. So yeah, like I said, there's many options with a rat deck. I'm seeing it a whole lot now. And it is kind of meme-y, but you know, it's very unexpected when you see, you know, all these rats on your board and you can't make a move because there is no more space on your board
for
either player.
Yeah, I think with Monsters, you just have so many different options with it. It's going to be a faction you're going to start out with as well. So, like, again, I would focus on the Thrive curve, understanding how that works. Then looking into how Consume works with scenarios, how to take advantage of Death Wish, how to play Death Wish correctly so you don't give the enemy player an advantage, and then learning Frost and moving cards back and forth. So I think that kind of ends it for Monsters, unless you have something else you want to talk about. I mean, there's so many things we probably haven't talked about. It really comes down to, you know, Gwent as a game is you have to play, is the way to learn and the way to find the decks that work the best. I would recommend making your own deck first, and then, of course, net decking, going on playgwent.com, looking at trending and big decks and going from there and seeing, you know, what your favorite part of Monsters is. I know when I started playing Monsters, Bleed was one of my favorite things, and playing the Vampire after, of course, learning the Thrive. So,
I mean, I think we could touch on the, and Draga builds, you know, the Kiki deck builds, and then we have Werecat as well. Mm-hmm. Werecat's another very good card, even though it doesn't look like it's not.
It's super underplayed. Yeah. It's super underplayed.
Werecat's, you know, a 3/7 card, but it's got Thrive, which, you know, that's very easy to proc. If it, you know, you just play anything with 4 or higher. And then when it's deployed, it hits all enemy units on the opposite row that it's played. So if you're playing it on range, it'll hit their opponent's range, your opponent's ranged row. If you're playing it on melee, so forth. And then when it's consumed by Death Wish or however you want to say it's removed, as long as it's not banished, it'll repeat that deployability again. So basically, it's a built-in Thrive Lacerate if it's used twice. That can be very powerful.
Yes, very powerful. Yeah, I mean, there are so many, like, I think with any faction, there's so many cards that you go through and you're like, okay, I've made it. That card's really good too. So, I mean, even with looking at Penitent, it's a Thrive Spectre card that, you know, it's a 2-power card that has Thrive, but once it's killed, it summons a random 7-cost unit from your deck to a random allied row, and that's so many cards. That can be a Crone. It could be a Pugo Broombreaker, which is a 10 power card that when deployed damages a random allied unit by 3. And if there is no allies, damage self by 5. But if you're drawing that card with that with Death Wish ability, it does actually does not proc the deploy because it is being summoned.
Yeah, so I've seen people pull, you know, Pugo as well. Like I said, that's one of the main ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then pulling Beast.
Yeah, that which Beast is that card we talked about every turn plus 2. Yeah, that can get pretty out of control pretty quick. For sure.
Yeah, like as long as you're maintaining that dominance, you know, with monsters, which is very easily done, Beast is going to go skyrocketing.
Yep. And you can even play that in a consume type of deck. You could bring out Imperial Manticore, which is a 5 power card that if you destroy the next turn, will destroy the lowest enemy. So there's all different sorts of things you can do with monsters. So like as always, I would say get out there and play, learn the Thrive mechanic, and yeah, I think that's pretty good. Unless you got something else. We're probably missing all sorts of stuff, but you know, this is.
Yeah, like I said, there's a lot of cards that that benefit, you know, either just the really big point swing with monsters, or like I said, we have the engine buildups. But like I said, like what we were talking about, you just have to play the game. You have to experiment with what cards you see that look interesting to you. Even if it doesn't work, at least you know that it can work with something else. Just because the card doesn't work in your deck list doesn't mean that it doesn't work, period.
Yeah, and a lot of the times, especially I've learned, even now learning, that if you can play anybody's deck, it could be the best damn deck in the game, but if you do not know how to play it, you're not going to get anywhere. So just play. I think Monsters it's not the most powerful faction by any means, but it can be very powerful if played the correct way. And it's one of the easier factions to learn, in my opinion, just because of some of the mechanics, but it could be a super hard one to master. So otherwise than that, guys, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be recording some of these video-wise too. We hope you join us live sometime. If you like the content, please leave a comment, follow us in our podcast as well. If you're listening to us on anchor.fm, there's a way to subscribe now. So if you want to donate to the channel to make the content a little bit more professional, you can also head over to our Twitch channels. That is twitch.tv/EZRAS, which is Ezra's, or you can follow me /DarkTemp66 is another great way to show us you're listening. But there's all different sorts of ways to help out. If you want to be a part of the podcast, please drop us a comment, send us a follow. We'll be glad to have you aboard. It's all about highlighting new players, new streamers, and getting people involved in the game. But guys, thank you again so much for listening. We will see you on the next episode where we're going to be focusing on the faction I fucking hate the most, Skellige. So, till next time, have a good one.